Sure Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Hello, everybody. Bill Cloud here. Thank you for joining me today. Hope your day is going well, and I hope this program is going to be beneficial for you. We, over the last several weeks, have been talking about seeds. We've been talking about good seed, bad seed, and how these things, these biblical principles, are manifest through people. And over the last few weeks, we've been talking specifically about Esau and Jacob. Last week, we're talking even more specifically about Esau's war on Jacob. Or let's rephrase that. The serpent's war on Jacob. And we also talked about how the fact that Jacob is born again as Israel. And so then there is this war that the adversary has for many millennia now unleashed upon Israel. And here's why. Because Israel is the good seed. That is the identity of the good seed, Israel. So that's what we're going to begin to kind of talk about in this program and some ensuing programs, that Israel is the good seed. Now, to kind of recap from last time, we were talking about Jacob's encounter with God. And this was as he was about to come back into the land from Syria. He's been serving Laban for 20 years, and now he's coming back into the land. But there's a problem. When he left the land, it was because his brother Esau was going to kill him. And as far as he knows, Esau hasn't changed his mind. In fact, he has not. So he sent word to his brother Esau that he was coming and finds out that Esau is actually coming to meet him, and he's got 400 men coming along with him, which bothers Jacob, and that would be natural because it would seem that he's coming with an army. And if he's coming with an army, he's coming to do battle. So Jacob has an encounter, and this is when he encounters the angel, or the man, actually, it says, that apparently has the face of God. And we believe, of course, that this is an encounter with God. He names the place Penuel, I've seen the face of God and have not died. But in that encounter, in this wrestling match, his hip is pulled out of joint. He is asked to let him go, that is the man, but he says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. But in blessing him, he asks him your name. And, of course, he told him Jacob, Yaakov, hand on heel. And without going into all the details of that, we've covered that in previous programs. From that encounter, Jacob becomes Israel. He's born again as Israel. And he is given a distinctive walk that identifies him as being Israel. As I said earlier in the last program, Israel is not so much about who your mother and father are. Because as we've seen in programs, you can be conceived in the same womb, fathered by the same man, and still have a situation where you've got a Cain and an Abel, or you've got an Esau and a Jacob. So those bloodlines are not the most important thing. What is the most important thing is, are you changed? Have you been born again of that incorruptible seed? Is the Word of God in you? Is His seed in you? That's what identifies the sons of God and distinguishes them from the sons of the adversary, if His seed is in you. So Israel is given this distinctive walk that identifies him as Israel, which is emblematic of the fact that when you and I are born again of that incorruptible seed, in the Father's eyes, we become His people called Israel. Again, not because we're replacing anybody, but because we're taking our place at the table, so to speak, as being part of the family Israel in Messiah, grafted into and becoming part of that cultivated olive tree. So, as Israel, we are never to walk the same way again. We are to have a distinctive walk that identifies us, not because of who our mother and father are or were, but because of the fact His seed, His Word, personified in the Messiah, is in us. And so we bear the fruit of that seed. We walk a distinctive way. Because in Psalm 37, verse 23, we read it last week, let's read it again. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. That is not necessarily saying that whatever happens to me in life, God works it out and everything turns out okay. That's not really what that passage is getting at. It's really telling me this, that God's already determined and ordained and actually had somebody write it down in a book called the Bible, how a good man is supposed to walk. We walk according to His instructions. We are given a distinctive walk in His Word. And so then, when we do that, and we're walking in righteousness according to God's instructions, because we've been born again of that incorruptible seed, we have the authority that has been invested in us by the Messiah Himself to overcome the adversary. If you will, to take our heel and this walk that we're on, we're walking those steps that have been ordained of God. And when we're doing that, we are authorized, every step we take, if there's a serpent that slithers out onto our path and threatens to strike, we have the authority to take our heel and to put it on the top of his head. That's what the Messiah told us. And that is exactly why the adversary hates us. That's why the adversary hates Israel and seeks and has always sought to destroy Israel. He's done it through his operatives going all the way back to the beginning. Cain, then Ishmael, Esau, Haman in Persia. Haman was not a Persian. He was an Agagite, it says. This is in the story of Esther. He was an Agagite, which means he was of the royal line of Amalek. And Amalek was a grandson of Esau. Haman was an Edomite. He was a descendant of Esau. Sanballat, he was someone who wanted to get into the midst of Israel. When Nehemiah and the men of Israel were restoring the walls of Jerusalem and of the temple, he wanted to pretend to be their friend and coexist with them, but his motive was really this, to kill them. Herod the Great, please send me back word where I may find a child that I may come and worship also. But that wasn't his true intention. His intention was to murder him. He was a descendant of Esau. And then, of course, when we come down to the very end of days, the anti-Messiah is going to rise. All of this is to demonstrate that the adversary hates God's people. He hates the righteous seed, identified as Israel, wants to destroy them. But he's got to be very clever, crafty, shrewd in how he goes about it. And so then, that's why he sows tares in the midst of the wheat. That's why he uses people to call for tolerance and social justice and coexistence, to lure Abel out into the field, so to speak, under the guise of wanting to have a nice civil conversation, only to, when we're by ourselves, to take something and strike the righteous seed over the head to destroy them. This is going to continue right up until the very end. In fact, we read in Revelation chapter 12 that after being unsuccessful at destroying the woman, and after being unsuccessful of this woman who was giving birth, the dragon is there waiting for the child to be born, it says, waiting to devour the child. But the child was caught up into God, into his throne, so he can't get to him now. Of course, we believe that refers to the Messiah. So what does the dragon do at that point? Well, here's what it says in verse 17 of Revelation 12. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah. So he's enraged with the woman. He can't get to the woman. She has a place that God has made for her to protect her for a time and times and half a time. He can't get to the male child, so what is he going to do? He's going to go after the remnant of her seed, is the way the King James puts it. He's going to try to destroy those who keep the commandments of God, that's the fruit, and who have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah, that's the seed. Those are the people that pose the biggest threat to his kingdom. Those are the people who can, in the midst of darkness, be light. And where there is light, it exposes the works of darkness. And because he wants to deceive, he can't have his secrets exposed by light. And so he wants to snuff out the light. So he wants to come against the righteous seed. Now, in Matthew chapter 13, verse 38, the Messiah who's given us the parable of the wheat and the tares says this, "The field is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one." Now here's why we wanted to bring this out. We're not going to take the time to read the entire parable. We've covered that in episodes before. But we understand that the good seed that's being sown in the parable of the wheat and tares is first the Word of God. But we also know that the Word of God became flesh and dwelt among us in the person of Yeshua the Messiah. So he's the good seed too. But here he tells us that the good seeds are also the sons of the kingdom. And in contrast to that, you've got the sons of the wicked one. So I could say that if the good seed is the Word of God first, personified in the Messiah second, and that doesn't mean in less importance, by the way, and then thirdly, the sons of the kingdom, then I could say that the other seed, the tare, represents the adversary's word, the anti-Messiah, and all those other people that follow the anti-Messiah and who bear the fruit of the seed of the adversary, the sons of the wicked one, just like Cain. So then, the Messiah is the seed, the good seed. He is the seed of the woman. But all those that are in him are also the good seed, the seed of the woman. In other words, we understand that in Galatians, he is the seed of Abraham. But we also understand that those that are in him are the seed of Abraham. And so if he is the good seed that is being sown in the parable of the wheat and the tares, we also see that the good seeds are the sons of the kingdom. And so whatever he is, being the head of the body, has some bearing on who and what we are supposed to be, our function. Look in Galatians chapter 3, verse 16. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He does not say, and to seeds, plural, as of many, but as of one, and to your seed, who is Messiah. So again, Messiah is the good seed. He is the seed of the woman. He is the seed of Abraham. And so the good seed, of course, was hung upon that tree. And when he's hanging upon the tree, and of course is placed in the tomb, 3 days later he's resurrected from the tomb. He destroys the works of the devil, according to 1 John 3, once and for all time. Now, in the process, his heel was bruised, literally, because when they hung people on the tree to crucify them, this is my understanding, it wasn't typically like we see in all the artist's renderings. A lot of times, they would be hung with their arms up over their head, with their knees bent, and heel to heel, they would drive that spike through the heel, not through the top of the foot, but through the heel. And so if Yeshua was crucified in a similar manner, then literally his heel was bruised. And so hanging upon the tree, his heel was bruised. But in the process of having his heel bruised, he crushes the head of the adversary. He destroys the works of the devil. However, the adversary, as I understand it right now, is not in the abyss. He's not in the lake of fire. He's still out trying to steal, kill, and destroy, and specifically the righteous seed. So here's what I'm trying to get across. Even though he can't do anything to the Messiah, what he could have done to the Messiah, he has already done. The work of the Messiah has been accomplished. It is done. It's sealed. And yet the adversary is still at large. His doom is determined. His judgment is determined. But he's not in the lake of fire right now. He's still out there trying to destroy the sons of the kingdom. He's trying to destroy those that he perceives to be the good seed, the seed of the woman, Israel. Now, we're told in Revelation 12 that those people, that nation, the sons of the kingdom, are purposed to overcome the adversary. They're going to overcome him, but he's going to try to destroy them. So here's what we're trying to say. The Messiah has done what he's going to do. His work is finished, and we're not taking anything away from the work of the Messiah, because if it wasn't for him, then you and I'd have no hope. At the same time, the adversary's not in the abyss. He's still being allowed to go about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And he's not just looking for any old body to devour. He doesn't have to devour the sons of the wicked one. He wants to devour the sons of the kingdom, the good seed. So then, if Messiah is the good seed, that means, because he's the head of the body, we're the good seed. If he's the seed of Abraham, that means we're the seed of Abraham, if we're in him. If he is the seed of the woman, that means we too are the seed of the woman, because we are in him. He's the head of the body, and what pertains to the head of the body is going to permeate throughout the body. So then, in Revelation chapter 12, verse 11, here's what we're told that good seed, or the seed of the woman, is supposed to do. It says, "And they overcame him," and here's how, "by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death." So those same people that in Revelation 12, verse 17, who are called the remnant of her seed, who keep the commandments of God, that's the fruit, and who have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah, that's the seed, are the same, I believe, that it's saying here, are the ones who overcome the adversary. How do they do it? Again, by the word of their testimony, by the blood of the Lamb, and they love not their lives even to the death. They are the overcomers. Now, to overcome something implies this to me. You overcome something. You transcend something. If we're walking down that path that has been established for a good man, the steps that God has ordained for us, so we're walking down that path in obedience, having the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah, and here comes the serpent into our path. We overcome him because we have the blood of the Lamb. We have the word of the testimony. We're not concerned about our lives because our lives are in him. We can overcome him. That means to me taking our heel and putting it on his head. Again, Messiah said, "I give you the authority to trample on scorpions and serpents." I don't think he was talking about go out into the woods and get some rattlesnakes and handle them. He was alluding to the prophecy of Genesis chapter 3. Because he's overcome the world, we can overcome the world. Because he crushed the head of the serpent, we in him, walking according to his righteousness, can crush the head of the serpent. In fact, let me read Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, where it predicts the defeat of the enemy. "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." The he that's mentioned here is first and foremost talking of the Messiah. He is the one who would overcome the world. He's the one who would destroy the works of the devil. He's the one who would crush the head of the serpent. But now I want to read to you a very interesting, provocative, maybe even controversial rendering of this particular passage. And it's taken from the Herzl edition of the Pentateuch and Haftarahs, a Jewish perspective. I'm going to read you the same verse with this different rendering. "And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. They shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise their heel." And so notice the absence of the word he. And considering that this is coming from a Jewish point of view, there are those that might argue that the reason this rabbi rendered it this way is because he wanted to remove any messianic connotation. He wanted to remove anything that would suggest that Yeshua is the Messiah. And while I would agree that the rabbi certainly did not acknowledge and does not acknowledge Yeshua as being the Messiah, I don't believe he's removing any messianic connotations. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, there's something in the Hebrew here that suggests that the word he and the word they are both correct. They're not contradicting one another. And that is going to be found in the word that is translated for us as he, and or it's translated as the word it sometimes, and the reason, because it's translated it, this rabbi went a step further and used the word they. It's the word who. In Hebrew, who, which is spelled he, vav, aleph, who. It can mean he, it can mean it, and if it can mean it, then extrapolate that out, it can be they. Because if it is a nation, let me back up here. We believe the Messiah is the one who is the seed of the woman, who is going to crush the head of the adversary. From a Jewish point of view, they see this as speaking of Israel. That Israel is the one that God in the world uses to overcome evil. That if Israel is walking according to His commandments, keeping His instructions, being faithful to the covenant, that through Israel, God will overcome evil. And that in the end, Israel will be the one to put their heel on the adversary's head. So, if we think the way Greeks do, one is right and the other is wrong. But Hebraically, that one may be right, and that one may be right, because they don't contradict. Because you see, the Messiah is Israel. The Messiah is the King of Israel. He is the head of the body. And what pertains to the head of the body will permeate throughout the body. And so if He is the one who crushes the head of the serpent, then that means the body is also authorized to crush the head of the serpent. If He is the King of Israel, and He is, and He crushes the head of the serpent, then that means that Israel, the body, is also authorized to crush the head of the serpent. And so what I'm trying to get across here is that these two different renderings do not contradict one another. They speak in concert with one another. The Messiah said, I've overcome the world, therefore you can overcome the world. I'm going to give you the authority to trample on scorpions and upon serpents. He's already destroyed the works of the devil, but the devil is still out there waging war against His people. So how is that? It seems to me, it's even though He has already finished His work, perhaps it's that Israel hasn't quite finished their work. That you and I have a responsibility, because we are in Him, to provide light in the midst of darkness. And if we're going to do that, we're going to have to walk the steps that God has ordained for His people. We're going to have to be that righteous seed. And we're going to, as we step down this path, when the adversary comes against us, if we are walking as His people, if we're walking in Messiah, then we have the authority to step on the head of that serpent. And so again, that Hebrew word that's so key to this is the Hebrew word who, typically translated he. And that's why it is in most translations. But actually, the King James Authorized Version translates the Hebrew word who as it. It. And again, if you're looking at it from a Jewish perspective, that would say Israel. Well, both are right, because He is the King of Israel. He is the head of the body. And so all of that is to say that because the Messiah has overcome, we've been given the authority to overcome as well. Israel is that good seed. And even though the Messiah has already crushed the head of the adversary still wages war. He's still coming after you and me, and that means you and I have the challenge set before us today. And that is, are we going to walk that distinctive walk that identifies us as Israel? Because in a way, when you do that, you're kind of putting a target on your back. And so it really is going to boil down to this. Do you trust Him enough? Do I trust Him enough to walk the way He said to walk? Believing that He is going to keep and guard me, that He's going to bring me to that place that I do truly overcome the adversary. Because how am I going to do it? I'm going to do it by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of my testimony, and it's because I've got a target on my back and I don't even care. I love not my life even unto death. Because my mission is to manifest the fruit of the seed that is in me, to bear the fruit of the incorruptible seed. I'm placed here to serve His purposes, to exemplify light as opposed to darkness, to manifest holiness as opposed to what is profane. Because, you see, if I bear that good fruit, there may be some other people out there that take that fruit and ingest that good seed and come out of darkness into light. The adversary does not want that to happen, but the Creator is looking for that remnant of her seed that will be true to His calling, true to the challenge that He sets before us. The steps of a good man are ordered of the Lord. It's really up to us whether or not we're going to do it. Hey, come back and join us next week as we continue talking about Israel, the good seed. Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a Bill Cloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.